Hello, I'm Michelle Hanratty. Welcome to Sound Optometry, the podcast from Docket that provides high-quality continuing professional development for GOC-registered optometrists. You can gain one CPD point by listening to this podcast and completing the short exercise on our website, docket.info. This episode is all about enhanced optometric services in England. The story begins in the pandemic. Cast your mind back 5 years to the lockdowns and the severe disruption to eye care that came with them. CUES, which then stood for the COVID-19 Urgent Eye Care Service, was born. It provided urgent assessment and treatment for sudden onset eye problems through community optometrists, reducing the need for referral to hospitals. Since then, CUES has become known as the Community Urgent Eye Care Service. And in many parts of the country, optometrists have been able to provide an even greater breadth of enhanced services through additional schemes. Pre- and post-op cataracts is one example. MECS, or the Minor Eye Condition Service, is another. But for optometrists such as Dharmesh Patel, these services are not a new idea. They've been pushing for them for many years, even before the pandemic.
Having worked in lots of different optometric settings, and then eventually having my own practice and getting involved with my local optical committee really drove me and colleagues in Stockport in Greater Manchester to explore what that looked like in terms of working with the local acute trust about the value optometry can provide for both patients and the NHS and practices.
Dharmesh is now the Chief Executive of Primary Eye Care Services, an organisation which manages many of the enhanced services around England. Dharmesh will tell us why integrated care boards around the country are commissioning optometrists to do even more in primary care, from paediatrics to glaucoma monitoring. And later on, we'll hear from Hayley Moore, an optometrist in Essex who delivers a large number of enhanced services in her community. She'll explain how we can all get involved to improve both patient outcomes and reduce the burden on hospitals.
When I first started seeing patients, they'd been waiting about 18 months for that first appointment. And obviously that was a COVID backlog there as well, but potentially patients were going blind whilst they were waiting. And now it's unusual if a patient's been waiting more than a month from the initial referral from the optometrist to when I see them.
But first, for an introduction to the potential for enhanced services in optometry today, let's meet Dharmesh.
I'm Dharmesh Patel. I'm an optometrist by background, and I'm currently Chief Executive at Primary Eye Care Services.
So what do Primary Eye Care Services actually do?
That's a very good question, Michelle. Primary Eye Care Services is technically the largest provider of enhanced optometry services in England. What it means is we act as the lead contract holder with the NHS, and we work with optometry practices and local optical practices and hospitals to deliver those services via optometry in the local community. So we conduct that sort of leadership role, as well as that contractual and performance management and quality improvement function, as well as making all the money flow.
So optometrists would contract with you if they wanted to provide an enhanced service to their local integrated care board, or ICB as we also call them.
Yeah, that's correct. So where we're the lead provider, we contract with the NHS and we subcontract with the practices, enabling them to deliver that care for their local patients.
Now, you're not the only organisation. There are others as well, aren't there, across the country, but yours is by far the largest. But from your perspective, why are enhanced optometric services so valuable?
For lots and lots of good reasons. Utilisation of the skills of optometrists and the entire optical practice staff is really, really valuable. And ophthalmology is the biggest cause of attendance for outpatients in England. And the demand continues to be challenging, as is raised by both the College of Optometrists and the Royal College. So these services do sort of two functions. One is reduce the number of patients needing to go into the hospital eye service, but also some of those patients who are in hospital eye service to be treated and managed more close to home in their local optical practice. So supporting demand management in hospitals, but also for optometry supporting their patients in their local community. So there's a double benefit. And the bonus, as I would call it, and the NHS would call it a primary function, is that quite often it's more cost effective than a more expensive hospital episode.
You've mentioned funding, and with the changes that are about to happen with NHS England in particular, are there any areas where enhanced services are at risk, do you think?
So that's a really good question. There's a lot of change going on, of course. There seems to be something new announced every week at the moment. But some of the changes are sort of quite distant to us as providers on the ground, and very much around merging NHS England with the Department of Health, etc., which will change policy and perspective and organisation efficiency of the NHS. But there is also lots of challenge on ICBs in terms of pressures of cutting costs, and inevitably that's going to have an impact. We don't have lots of areas where optometry has been targeted for cuts at the moment. We are, I'm glad to say, I think on the whole, seen as part of the solution, not the challenge.
In previous episodes of Sound Optometry, we have looked at enhanced services before, and 3 years ago we looked at the provision of post-op cataract services as well as MECs and Qs, in particular in the Manchester Stockport area as well. Overall, what impact have these enhanced services had on reducing the strain on hospital services?
Massive. And I think we can't underestimate the impact it's had across systems across the country. And in fact, in a case study we just published recently, we've had a look at the volume of queues and MECs type activity, which effectively is providing minor and urgent eye care in the local community. And for us at Primary Eye Care Services, we saw just shy of 500,000 patient episodes over the last 12 months.
Wow.
In between 2,000 and 2,500 practices. So what's great to see is that general practice love the service and they know the impact it has on them. We know that accident and emergency departments in areas with queues and MECs are seeing less presentations of eye-related problems. And when you look at queues and MECs, the potential impact is really, really substantive. And that's what has really allowed us to look at what the opportunity is. The NHS could save up to £30 million effectively if it was scaled up consistently across the whole of England. I think for post-cataract, what we know is that over the last 12 months, just under 200,000 hospital appointments have been avoided by doing that follow-up care in practice, which is just phenomenal when you think about the demands on hospitals up and down the country.
Today, various ICBs in England are commissioning an increased range of enhanced optometric services. But one of the areas that has embraced this is Mid and South Essex. Hayley Moore is an optometrist there, and she's with me now. Hello, Hayley. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Michelle. Thanks for having me.
So just to start with a little bit of background, can you tell the listeners what you do, where you work, and which enhanced optometric services you actually provide?
So I currently work at Southend University Hospital in the eye unit, but I also work in the community across Essex, and that's where I provide the enhanced services, mainly in Specsavers practices. So we are very fortunate in Essex. We have lots of enhanced services. So we have a MEC service. We also have something called CES, which is Community Eye Service. Essentially, if a patient is referred to the hospital and the hospital want things like an OCT scan or they want additional information, they'll often bounce the referral back to a CES practitioner. It's kind of a bit like a MECs, but the hospital specifically requests what they want to see. So that's a really good scheme that I participate in. I also do a post-cataract scheme, a paediatric scheme, and then I do a couple of glaucoma schemes. So a GRR, which is where we have a funded repeat fields or contact tonometry, or sometimes both, and also a GERS, which is a glaucoma enhanced referral service.
So you do like to keep yourself busy?
Definitely.
Okay, so can we just talk about the paediatric service to begin with? Mm-hmm. So what exactly does that involve?
So these are generally children who have failed the school screening that is done normally in reception age. And upon failing the school eye test, the parents are contacted and told to book in with a paediatrics practitioner such as myself. Often it's the child's first eye test. And they come in and see me, and then it's basically a normal eye test, but we do a cyclo and essentially work out if they need a prescription. Sometimes it can just be the child was having an off day at the school screening, so it's not always, you know, that they need glasses, but often it is the case that they are amblyopic or have reduced level of vision. So then we would prescribe, if necessary, glasses. And then we are funded to review the patient once they've worn the glasses for 6 weeks. And then, if necessary, we're also funded to see the patient in a further 12 weeks after that. And then there's lots of detail around the scheme in terms of decision making, what we need to do at each appointment, whether the patient can be safely continued to be monitored in the community or whether they should be referred into secondary care.
So why do you think paediatrics is a particularly good service to offer patients?
I mean, we've seen huge improvements in our community paediatrics and also secondary care offerings since we've had the scheme. So to give you some examples, in 2017, the wait for a routine appointment was 18 months. The service has reduced waiting times by over a half. So now a routine appointment can be seen in less than 8 months. And that means that patients who need an urgent appointment are able to be seen within a few weeks because there's more capacity in secondary care. And also the numbers on the waiting list have reduced by more than half as well. So really massive benefits from the hospital side of things and also from waiting times for patients that are need to be referred. But actually, most of the kids that I see don't actually end up needing to be referred. And the children and their parents really like it because they're getting that continuity of care. It's in a nice familiar setting and they're reviewed in short timescales as well, which I think, you know, from a parent's perspective, if it's come as a bit of a shock that their child needs glasses or they've got a high prescription, it's actually really reassuring to be able to say, you know, once the child collects the glasses, I will see them again in 6 weeks and we'll follow up on everything. I think that's quite nice rather than leaving them for months on end or just with an open, you know, you'll get a referral from the hospital. So that's really nice.
So it sounds like it's a very much community focused service and it must be very rewarding for you as well. Is there any particular story that stands out or any particular patient scenario that stands out in your mind recently where you thought, wow, I'm really glad that we're able to offer this service?
Yeah, one was a 5-year-old girl and this one always strikes in my mind. She was a lovely girl, lovely family. You know, they came in and they were concerned. She'd failed the school eye test and her unaided vision. I mean, we work in Logmar on the scheme, but her unaided vision in her right eye was about 6/24 and in her left eye was about 6/18. So to get to 5 with that level of vision is quite unusual. And the parents hadn't really noticed any major symptoms. And when I cycloed her, I mean, even I was shocked because she was plus 11 in both eyes.
Wow.
Yeah, she only had about an 050, 075 SIL. But even directly after cycloing her, I checked her VAs and she'd already come up to about 612 in both eyes. So normally that's a really good sign. Normally they're going to do really well with just the glasses prescribing. And actually, she had no strabismus. I reviewed her in 6 weeks and her VA had improved to 0.1 logmar, so about 607.5. Mm. So I think I could confidently say most practitioners, if they refracted a plus 11 child first prescription, they may well think I need to refer this child. That's a very high prescription. But actually, it just shows the power of just monitoring and being funded to do so in the community. And that saved that child needing to attend secondary care. That was a fantastic outcome. And I see her all the time for her eye test. Now, she's been discharged from the scheme, but her parents won't go to anywhere else.
What happens when a child does need to be referred in? So a scenario where the vision hasn't improved as much as you would have liked.
Yeah, there was another boy. Actually, I saw him last week. He failed the school eye test. He's 4. And again, mum hadn't really noticed any issues. I checked his unaided vision and his left eye was seeing 0.24. So kind of between about 6.9, 6.12. His right eye was 0.7. So, you know, about 6.30. And mum was quite surprised. You know, she just hadn't really noticed anything that had caused her any concerns. I cycloed him and he was plus 7.50 in the right eye, plus 5 in the left. So at his cyclo, he improved very slightly from the 0.7 to the 0.6 in the right eye. So I saw him in 6 weeks and he had improved both eyes. So in the right eye, he was about 6.12. The left eye, he was kind of 6.7.5 to 6.9-ish. And under our scheme, if they are improving, but there's still a bit of amblyopia, which clearly this kid had, then we see them again in 18. So it's another 12 weeks from that 6-week review. And I cycloed him again, but unfortunately his VA hadn't really picked up in his right eye, despite really good compliance with glasses. And he was still about 6.12 in the right eye, but he was actually 6.6 now in the left eye. So that was one that I did end up actually referring into secondary care, because he's probably going to need occlusion therapy. But the benefit to secondary care is they've got all of the information from all the three appointments I've seen him for. And so they're actually hitting the ground running when he gets into the hospital, rather than monitoring him and see how he's going to improve with glasses wear. It's really nice that they've got all that back history.
And I know that when we've spoken previously, you've been very enthusiastic about the glaucoma work that you do as well. So can you tell me a little bit about the glaucoma enhanced services that you provide?
Yeah, in Mid and South Essex, we have something called the Enhanced Glaucoma Enhanced Referral Scheme, or GERS. So essentially, if an optometrist suspects their patient might have glaucoma, they're referred to the hospital and all the referrals are triaged and redirected to the most appropriate service provider. So if there's any missing data from the referral, or there's anything that, you know, it sounds like the optometrist wants a second opinion or they're not sure, then they will be referred to us in GERS. So in that appointment, essentially, we throw the kitchen sink at these patients, basically. So they'll have pachymetry, full suite of OCTs, anterior segment OCT, threshold fields, an anterior segment exam. So particularly, you know, if the patient's got high pressure, I'm looking to see, you know, what Van Herricks are like, what the angles look like. Is there anything like pigment dispersion syndrome, pseudo exfoliation syndrome? They'll have a dilated fundus exam, so that we get a really good stereoscopic view of the discs, and they have contact tonometry done, so I do Goldman. So essentially, yeah, we do absolutely everything and then can give a fully informed opinion on whether the patient needs to be seen in secondary care or whether they can be discharged, and then we give them, you know, appropriate advice. And then we also give them a full report, and they've also got a copy that they can take back to their referring optometrist. So it's really nice, actually, because you get feedback directly from the practitioner, which, you know, sometimes if you're referring to the hospital, it might take you some time to get that information back, or you might not get it back at all in some time. So GERS is really nice, working with other community optometrists to support local practitioners.
So you mentioned assessing the anterior angle. So with this service, do you need to perform gonioscopy?
No, I can do gonio, but because the service provision was agreed that we could use anterior segment OCT. And that was something that when the service was agreed, I know that the consultants were a bit back and forth on that for a while. But really, the argument was that all of the benefits that we'd be able to offer was going to be quite inhibited if they insisted that it was gonioscopy that was done in the community. So they relented on that one. But I mean, the figures are sensational for what we've seen in the community. So I think they're quite happy with the service, to be honest.
So for optometrists that want to get involved with glaucoma care in the community, how can optometrists get more confident in doing that? Are there any extra qualifications that are required, do you think?
It's all core competency. But there are things, you know, if you're not confident in certain areas, then of course there's ways that you can upskill. So the WOPEC courses are fantastic. You can do a glaucoma module. So if you contacted your employer or your local optical committee, they normally can provide you with a code so you can access the courses on the WOPEC website. And then you've got obviously things like your professional certificates and your higher qualifications. So in order to do GERS, you have to have a minimum of Prof. Cert glaucoma, just really to evidence that you've got good quality skills and it's going to allow you to make good quality decisions. I mean, in terms of, I just want to touch briefly on the figures that we've seen across the area. So I started on the scheme since its inception in October 2022. We've had over 3,000 patients seen in GERS across Mid and South Essex. The waiting time when I first started seeing patients, they'd been waiting about 18 months for that first appointment. And obviously that was a COVID backlog there as well, but potentially patients were going blind whilst they were waiting for these initial appointments in the hospital. And now it's unusual if a patient's been waiting more than a month from the initial referral from the optometrist to when I see them.
So that's really quite a profound difference, isn't it?
But the biggest thing, Michelle, is the amount of patients that I see that actually don't end up in secondary care. So we have a 60% deflection rate. So that means 60% of patients that I see don't actually end up in the hospital. And that might seem quite shocking, but a lot of the time it's just because the limitations of GOSS and the limitations of the tests that were done at the site test. You know, it might be even as a case of the patient saying, you know, I was distracted when I was doing the Fields test and, you know, I felt it went a lot better today. Or it might be that the patient was referred for narrow Van Herrick's, but actually everything else is fine. It was just the optometrist wasn't aware of the PACS, you know, the primary angle closure suspect guidance, which is on the college CMGs. And if they're PACS minus, they can be monitored in the community, discharged back to their own optometrist. And also just other things like the importance of taking a really thorough history. So the amount of patients that I see who have just got really wacky myopic discs, but they're emmetropic virtually. And that's because they had cataract surgery done years ago, or they had LASIK done years ago, but they might have been new to that practice. So, you know, I think those are the kind of key things that come to mind when we're looking at why the deflection rate is so high.
Yeah. So if you could give some top tips to optometrists who are thinking about it but feeling a bit tentative, or even that they really want to go for it but don't know where to start, what top tips would you give them?
Best people to speak to is your LOC. They are a wealth of information and they'll have all the intel that you need about the services. They can send you through service specifications so you can have a look at it before you sort of commit to anything, so you can see exactly what supports out there. Certainly in our area, we can't even join the scheme without having a briefing with the clinical lead. So that's really nice. It's not just a case of waving around your WOPEC certificate and then that's it, you're good to go. We actually have a full briefing and you only start doing it once you're really comfortable to do so.
And just thinking about, I mean, your personal interest, how did you get involved in enhanced services in the first place? Because it's quite a big decision for some practitioners on a personal level, you know, professional level, but it's also a big decision for the practices they work in as well, isn't it?
I guess for me, I've always been interested in the more medical side of optometry. And I think just seeing the frustrations that a patient would say, oh, you know, I had a problem with my eye, so I contacted my GP. Knowing as optometrists, we have all the equipment, we have all the skills that, you know, in a lot of cases are far beyond what a GP can provide. And I think having the extra qualifications has meant that we were in a good position to get services commissioned in my area because we already had an upskilled workforce that was ready to go. And that's why I always say to other optometrists, it's a bit of a chicken and egg situation because you might have some optoms who say, you know, I quite fancy doing IP, but we don't really have any services in our area where I can use IP. But then it's such a chicken and egg situation because those services won't be potentially commissioned if we can't evidence that there's a workforce that can carry them out. So I've always tried to be really proactive with upskilling.
Hayley, thank you very much for your time today.
You're welcome. Thank you so much, Michelle. Thanks for inviting me onto the podcast.
Hayley talked about PACS guidance in our conversation. Just as a quick reminder, if you need a refresher on primary angle closure, scroll back to last month's episode of Sound Optometry. Now, if like me, you've been inspired by Hayley's experience in Essex, you're probably wondering about the opportunities in your area. I asked Dharmesh Patel, the optometrist in charge of primary eye care services, or PES as he sometimes refers to it, about how we could find out about what's possible in our own communities.
So there's a couple of ways. Obviously, they can speak to their local optical committee, who are usually really well engaged and working with us already. They can go on our website and you can look at your area and see what services are available in your area. Or they can just contact us by email or through the blue button on Opera and make a query and we will tell them, and then our clinical leads will work with them and support them in getting involved and engaged and delivering the services as quick as they can.
Is there any specific training that needs to be undertaken in order to provide some of these pathways?
It depends on the local area. We do have have unwarranted variation here, but as a general rule, some pathways have no additional training and accreditation with their core competency. We have some which we believe are core competencies, but the NHS has assisted on accreditation, so they may be WOPEC online courses are supported through LOCSU, and then there are others where you require a higher qualification, so you might need to do the college professional certificate, for example, to get involved with enhanced case finding in some parts of the country. So again, it depends on what service in your area and what the commissioning arrangement with that ICB is that determines what that is. So we'll work with them and advise on which one they need to do to be able to deliver the service.
And when optometrists are looking to do these courses, is there any funding available for these, or are optometrists expected to self-fund?
Yeah, so again, it depends on the course. So most WOPEC courses are free of charge online via their local optical committee as a national resource support. Higher qualifications, of course, has a cost attached to them via the universities. Interestingly, a lot of local systems, really driven by our LOC colleagues, have been identifying funding to be able to support some of those. So glaucoma and IP qualifications, for example, whether it's the Northwest, whether it's the Yorkshire area or the Midlands areas, there's been additional funding made available to put some people through. Depends on the timing, whether it's available at that particular time. So you make an inquiry with your local optical committee, or PES will direct you if we're aware of it, so you can get that higher qualification with whether it's partial or full funding support. It is a very much mixed scenario across the country. We would love a consistent workforce support pot nationally, but I think that that's a little way away.
Yes. And for optometrists who are seeing patients under an enhanced optometric scheme, what support is there in place if they found a situation where they weren't quite sure what to do next? Is there anyone they can go to, primary eye care services, to provide that kind of additional support as well?
Yeah, so I suppose it depends on the nature of the query, Michelle. So I think if it's about process, if it's about what's appropriate along with the pathway and the protocols, we have a local clinical lead in every one of the areas that we provide services who will support them, and they're contactable.
Optometrists also need to be confident that they can deliver services safely and effectively. I suppose that's where your auditing processes probably help. Not necessarily to make optometrists worried, but perhaps to help them identify where they could improve.
Yeah, and we do lots of it, Michelle, at PES. You know, we do lots of regular audit. We share that data back with practices and we look for outliers. We'll hopefully do more on self-reflection and stuff. So it's a critical part of enhanced service delivery. It gives confidence to people themselves and to the wider system, I think.
Yeah, and presumably that's where your clinical leads for the areas come in as well. So they come in and support with feedback.
Yeah, absolutely. They provide that one-to-one support where we've got outliers. So it's that supportive approach rather than a stick and a performance management approach, which is always much more effective, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's where we do have those situations. If you just tell a person, why are 3/4 of your flashes and floaters patients being referred, PVDs being referred, right? Suddenly they go, oh, why is it, right? And they need somebody like a clinical lead or someone to have a conversation with and say, this is not normal, this is unusual. And suddenly when you make people aware, practice changes.
So just to finish off, in your view, when you reflect on the work that you've done with enhanced services, is there any particular service that you're most proud of?
Yeah, so I think in terms of proud, I'd have to say Q's and the urgent eye care service. COVID did a lot to all of us and meant a lot to a lot of us, but actually the ability for us to scale up as a profession in the way we did is unparalleled. Both from a digital perspective, us as a lead provider, practices on the ground, the introduction of telemedicine in our profession, which was largely unheard of. You know, so for me, Q's, whilst I love all the services that we're delivering involved in, probably glaucoma is going to be the most emotive in the future. But actually, right now, in the years post-pandemic, I'd have to say Q's and its impact and how it's put optometry in the sight of ICBs in a way which it hadn't before.
So finally, just for optometrists listening to this who are keen to get more involved, what is your key piece of advice to them?
So my advice to them is to get involved. To get involved, to get involved. So if there are enhanced services in your area, whether it's through primary care services or whether it's through another mechanism, get involved. Whether it's through your local optical committee or directly with the lead provider, start delivering the service, engage, and maximise the skills that you have by using them. So I'd say that's the opportunity.
Dharmesh, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks also to Wazim Sarwar, a clinical lead at Primary Eye Care Services, for facilitating this episode. And thank you for listening. Don't forget that if you've got a topic in mind that you'd like us to cover, you can email us on podcast@docket.info or use LinkedIn to send us a message. There's a link in the podcast description. make sure you also head to docket.info and search for sound optometry to find the additional reading materials and resources for this episode. By listening to this podcast and completing the short exercise on the website, you can gain one CPD point covering professionalism. We'll be back again next month, so make sure you hit subscribe on your podcast app so that you don't miss out. The producer is Jason Hoskin. I'm Michelle Hanratty. Thanks for listening.